Okay, let's see, maybe it's time to get started. And well, it gives me a great pleasure to introduce here Dr. Pedro Castro. He's from the National Lab of Energy and Geology in Portugal. Just to give you a little bit of background about him, he actually obtained his PhD at the Technical University in Lisbon. And he's been very active in research, especially in the area of scheduling. In fact, I would say he's been probably one of the champions of the RTN Resource Task Network. And in fact, in the past, he's given us also a seminar on that topic. And so we have had the pleasure of having Pedro visit a number of times, and he's in one of these visits here. And so one of the things that he's done recently in a collaboration with Carlos Mendez in Argentina to work on a problem where he's had to sort of use a combined approach using MLP, constraint programming, and discrete event simulation. And that's basically the topic he's going to be talking about. And before we start, I just wanted to remind everybody who's out there, if you could please make sure you mute your telephone so we don't hear background noise. We do hear from one person, so I just want to make sure that we can all listen to the presentation by Pedro. Okay, so Pedro, welcome. Okay.
Okay. Thanks for the presentation. It's a pleasure for me to be here and giving this seminar. So the idea that Ignacio asked me to do was to give some of my knowledge about the different techniques that can be used to solve scheduling problems. In one hand, and on the other hand, since this should be something like a tutorial and more basic stuff, I'm also going to share some of the things that we have been learning in our review paper that we are presenting. So that will be the first part of the talk, and then I will go into more technical details concerning the different technologies and advantages and disadvantages. So I cannot. So let's see if I okay. So in terms of the outline of this talk, as I was saying, I will first give some basic concepts concerning scheduling in terms of the classifications of the scheduling problems that you may encounter on the one hand, and on the other hand, the classification of the scheduling models. Then I will discuss. So most of the talk will focus on mathematical programming, but I will also compare the performance of mathematical programming models to those from constraint programming and a discrete event simulation model that we have been developing for a specific type of problem. I will go and present some new full space model and the composition algorithms. And an interesting aspect of this is that they feature hybrid. They are hybrid in the sense that they rely on different concepts for time representation. And in terms of the solution approaches, they rely on combining two or three of these methodologies to solve the problem. And as I was mentioning, we are going to show the results in a case study from semiconductor manufacturing. So now for slide three. Well, it's always... Okay. So as you may, most of you know, scheduling plays an important role in most industries. And in terms of the types of decisions that are involved, we can divide the decisions in four types. So the first is related in a way to the batching or lot sizing problem, where we need to define a set of production orders from a set of production tasks from the customer orders that we have. So, and I took this figure from Christos Maravillas in our review paper, which shows on the left the batching problem. Then, once you define your production tasks, you need to solve how are we going to assign these production tasks to our resources. And I want to emphasize that we may have not only equipment resources, but other things like utilities, manpower, and so on. So, second stage. Third stage, once you have tasks assigned to a given resource, you need to sequence them to ensure that they do not take place simultaneously. And finally, once you sequence them, you also need to define their starting and ending time. So, four decisions involved in a scheduling problem. So, in terms of now for the classification of scheduling problems, I have to say that perhaps the most important aspect is related to the structure of the production facility. So, we may think of a sequential process where we may say that the identity of the lot of our production order does not change as we go through the different stages of production. So in this diagram in slide 4, we show that on the left a single stage problem, so only needs to go to one stage and there are two units in parallel or more. Then we move to the multi-stage case where several stages, and then finally the more complex multi-purpose case where a given equipment unit may be suitable for different stages of production, and some of the products, the different products, may go through different recipes. So they do not need to go through to the same production stages, and the stage is something that is more related to a given order and not to to the production process itself. On the other hand, as the second type of production facility, we have more like a network process, like in the original paper of Condilli, where we are going to allow, we have, instead of orders, we should talk about materials that we are going to mix, combine, react, and in order to come up with our final product. So I think the main distinction is that in sequential, you keep the identity of the lot. In network, you are going to allow for mixing and splitting in order to generate different materials. So, continuing on the classification of scheduling problems, if you go and look into the papers, there is most of the research is related to batch processes, but there are always important scheduling problems in continuous plants. So in terms of the distinction between these two extreme cases, I show here an example of a batch and a continuous task, and in terms of what is happening inside the vessels that are located upstream and downstream. So for a batch task, we have that the reactor contacts are charged in the beginning, and so in terms of the duration, this charging stage could be very fast compared to the duration of the batch task. Then we discharge the reactor contacts in the end. Whereas in contrast, in continuous tasks, which instead of being characterized by a given duration, they are going to be characterized by a processing rate. So we are continuously removing the contents from the tank A upstream and are continuously producing material B downstream. So this could be a plug flow reactor. Oops. Another aspect is the operation mode. So if you are given, if you have customer orders that you need to meet that are highly variable, let's say from 1 week to the next, you go for a short-term mode of operation, so your schedule will typically change from 1 week to the next. Whereas if you have a stable demand, more linked perhaps to a planning problem, you go and achieve a periodic, or also known as cyclic, scheduling. In terms of the type of operations, usually we also speak about production scheduling, but there are also important scheduling problems involving just transfer of materials. And one example of such is when you go and perform the scheduling of pipelines, where you have, for instance, in this slide number 6, in this figure, you have the refinery and the pump, and you need to decide the sequence of products and how much and the amount of each of these products you are going to pump in order to meet the demands at the different depots located in different points of the pipeline. And the pipeline itself can have a complex structure. Other aspects that are involved in terms of scheduling problems, I think there are many aspects that can be involved, but other of the most relevant are related to the storage policies that you may encounter. So you may have a fixed capacity, shared storage or not, unlimited storage, no storage. And another important aspect is the one related to changeovers. So in terms of, you may encounter sequence-dependent changeovers where, if thinking about colors, if you switch from black to white, you may require an extensive changeover, but if it's the other way around, from white to black, this may be quite fast. So you need also take this into consideration to try to maximize your productivity. So that was related to the classification of the scheduling problems. Now, in terms of the scheduling models, if you look into the literature and you do a careful analysis, you will find out that they are essential for different concepts for time representation. So all the models use one of these four concepts for time. The first, located on the upper left, is a discrete time representation where you are going to divide your time horizon into a fixed number of slots. The second, on the left below, is the concept of precedence, where you are going to use sequencing variables to identify if one task is before the other. And for this, you may either rely on the concept of immediate precedence or general precedence. Then, continuing to the right, we have the formulations that are based on time grids. So, also like in the discrete time, but now if you go for continuous time, the location of the time points or of the event points is going to be determined by the optimization solver itself. And so, as a consequence, we are going to have more complex problems. And there are two possibilities. You may rely on a single time grid to keep track of the events that are taking place, or on multiple time grids, which typically will perform better. But there are also some issues associated. So, in terms of generality, if you think about generality, I would have to say that single-time grid approach is the most general. Then we go for a discrete-time grid, which is less accurate, but it all can be quite general as well. Then multiple-time grids, and finally models using precedence variables, which tend to be suitable only for special plant topologies. If you use a time grid-based model, you will find out that your solution quality will be a function of the number of slots and also computational performance. So you want to minimize the number of slots that you require. And if we go from the discrete to the single time grid to the multiple time grids, we are reducing the number of slots and hopefully improving our computational performance. So now, some key aspects of all the models, of the main models that you may encounter to solve scheduling problems. In terms, if you are going to use the concept of precedence, well, I have to say that these are models that provide high-quality solutions with limited computational resources. It is perhaps their most strength. So you always have something and a solution of good quality. On the other hand, due to the extensive use of big M constraints, it is quite difficult to prove optimality. Another aspect, since you are relying on the concept of sequence, is that if you have information from the customer orders, such as due dates, that allow you to perform pre-ordering, it is very easy to implement on this model, so your performance will improve significantly. And finally, the third aspect is that in terms of the binary sequencing variables that you are using to handle the processing tasks, you can use this information also to keep track of other discrete resources such as manpower or transportation devices. So there are a few interesting aspects in this. And so below in slide 8, I'm showing a sequential process, which is not like what one is used to get, where there are different products with different recipes, and we have recycle coming back to the same equipment unit more than once for some recipes. So, and I have to say that this recipe can be handled by these precedence models. You may also go and use multiple time grids models for sequential facilities. And if you research into the literature, there are a few options available, changing on how you are going to interact with different time grids and also in terms of the number of indexes that you are using on your binary variables. They tend to be tighter and computational superior on one hand. On the other hand, they are also perhaps more difficult to understand. But this also depends on the experience that one has with each model. Now for slide 9, I'm discussing the main features of models for network facilities. So network facilities are the most complex arrangement since they may involve resource constraints other than equipment. And usually they are linked to systematic methods for process representation. So if we speak about the unified frameworks for process representation, we have the State Task Network by Condilli in 1993 and the Resource Task Network by Pantelidis. So in a way, on the diagram on the right, what I try to show is that you have to convert your process information in terms of the production recipes or the flow sheets, in terms of this virtual representation, which in this case is a resource task network. And then hopefully with this representation, you may use different models varying in the type of concept of type representation that will allow you to solve your problem at hand. So I also want to emphasize that if you go and look into constraint programming, and in particular the language OPL Studio, it is quite similar to the concepts of the RTM. So you need to use activities, which in one way are the tasks. You have the resources, which are the materials. And you have unary resources that are the equipment units. And another aspect that the work of Sebastian Engel has done is that they have developed a resource task network process model to feed their timed automata model. So it's not mathematical programming, but it's a timed automata model to address the scheduling problem. So this aspect of having a method for process representation can be quite important. In terms of the models for network facilities, so as I was discussing, we have discrete time approach. The main advantage is that they can handle, they have been shown capable of handling problems of industrial relevance, in particular the work that was performed at Dow Chemical. Their main advantage is that they give rise to simple, elegant, and very tight MILP formulations. Since you know the location of the time points on the grid and you can relate it to the actual time, a particular hour of a day, it provides, it has many advantages, and it allows you to easily integrate with higher level planning models. As the major drawback, it is related to data accuracy. So in terms that you need to somewhat round your processing data so that the duration of the tasks is a multiple of the interval length. If you go to continuous time with a single grid, I have to say, as I mentioned before, that this is the most general approach. On the one hand, it's a continuous time model that can be made highly sensitive to data in terms of considering variable processing times, for instance. And so we can argue that because of this, it is more appropriate for integration with a lower level control layer. So in terms of the automation pyramid, where we have planning, scheduling, and then control, perhaps we can argue that discrete time is more related to the higher level planning and continuous time to the lower level control layer. In terms of the continuous time with single time grid, the main drawback is that it can be highly inefficient computationally, meaning that most of the research is focusing on academic problems. Third alternative, continuous time with multiple time grids, work known by Marianti and Fludas at Princeton that is continuing, and also Karimi, his group, has been working on this recently. We have to say that the advantage is that fewer time slots are used and typically you get a better performance, although in the past 10 years we have been, many issues have been raised related to the generality of these approaches. So I think we have to say that they are still not there in terms of ensuring that they are not removing the optimal solution from the feasible space. Other solution approaches. Now, for constraint programming, we have to say that it is not as broadly applied as mathematical programming. If in the sense of someone that is coming up and is new to addressing scheduling problems, perhaps it's more easy to start because it has specific scheduling constructs that make life more easier to the model, and also. Since there are these standards constraints, will help the solver address this problem through constraint propagation. So as an example, I show here three simple instructions, like where on the first one, a processing task requires a particular unit. or in the second, in terms of the concept of precedence, because these constrained programming models also rely on the precedence concept. So a processing task of lot I on unit J precedes lot I on unit J plus 1. And then finally, the activity as selected resource is a very powerful constraint that assigns a particular processing task to one unit, in this case the robot, that belongs to the set of available unitary resources, set R. So, overall, you can build your model, and furthermore, you can also build your specific search strategy to take advantage into the specifics of your problem. And in a way, you achieve a fully integrated approach. As I was mentioned, it can be classified as a precedence-based approach, relying on a discrete time representation as well. It excels at makespan minimization, or in other way, it is very good when you have an objective function that is a function of a single variable. And as the most significant drawback, since it achieves optimality by adding constraints that remove the previous optimal solution from the solution space, that you don't have the idea of how far you are from the real optimal solution. So no optimality gap is being computed. So if the model does not terminate normally, then you do not know how far you are from the global optimal solution. In terms now in slide 12 of the discrete event simulation, we can say that is a heuristic rule-based approach where you are going to represent your problem as a sequence of interlinked modules featuring algorithms for decision making. So I show here an algorithm on the right where you are going to, given a sequence of processing tasks as a starting point, you are going to execute the processing tasks one by one and trying to take advantage the most of your available resources. It can be extremely useful for visualizing system behavior, as I will show in later on, and it is particularly handy for generating feasible solutions for these complex problems. Again, but as the main drawback, since it's an heuristic approach, it cannot guarantee optimality. So, and it may work quite well for small problems, but as our problems increase in size, you may lose performance. Okay, so now in the second part of this talk, I will address our case study from semiconductor manufacturing. And so I have this animation where I'm showing an automated wet etch station where we are giving a set of lots in the left that need to go through these processing stages. So I have to press again. The lots, the jobs have to go through a sequence of chemical and water baths until finishing production in this stage. And to transfer the lots between consecutive baths, we have this automated device, the robot, the robot can only pick one lot at a time, and on a particular bath, there may only be also one lot at a time. What is critical in this stage and what makes it difficult because these constraints are the storage policies that are involved. So in terms of the chemical baths, we have a strict processing time that we cannot exceed. Otherwise, we might damage the wafer lots. Whereas in the water baths, our processing time can be extended to allow for the lot to wait for the availability of the robot. So below I show the schedule, which can be divided on the processing schedule for the chemical and water baths below, and for the robot schedule above, so the schedule related to the transportation tasks. And as the objective, we are going to try to improve the performance of the plant by minimizing the make span. So, when we try to address this problem, the first part was we went to see how our full space models that are available in the literature were performing. And we came up with a new mixed integer linear programming model that actually has this interesting feature that it's hybrid in terms of the time representation concept. And actually, this was work done earlier by Bhushan and Karimi back in 2003, where they realized this, but now in our new model, we are using a different set of sequencing variables. But this is actually a quite nice paper that unfortunately is not as cited as I think as it should be, because it's quite interesting of this approach of using different time representations. So what is this? So we are basically using multiple time grids to keep track of the processing tasks. Why is this a good approach? Well, because in this case, this problem, we have a single unit per stage, so a single chemical and water chemical or water bath on a stage, and this will mean that there is no uncertainty in the number of time slots that we need to specify, meaning that global optimality of the solutions will be ensured when the number of slots equals the number of lots that you need. And furthermore, the sequence of the lots will not change throughout the processing stages due to the storage policies that are involved in the problem. So this is to keep track of the processing tasks. To keep track of the robot transfer tasks, we use the concept of general precedence. Why is that? Well, as I mentioned earlier, sequencing models tend to provide very good solutions in the early nodes of the search trees, although at the expense of being difficult to prove optimality, and you typically you will get a high integrality gap at termination. And we tested the alternative of using time grids for the robot, but found out that there were too many slots, and which resulted in a much worse computational performance. So now for slide 19. So just to show, I have an idea of some of these constraints for the processing tasks, featuring no big M constraints. So in terms of the chemical units, as I show in the diagram below, we have to ensure that as soon as the processing task ends, we need to transfer for the following stage, and for that the robot needs to be available. In terms of the water units, we show here that the processing time is extended in order to wait for the robot to be available and then transfer to the next bath. So, and there are other constraints that allow you one lot per time slot and so on, and the objective is that the absolute time of the last event point in the last unit must be lower than the make span, which is the variable that we are minimizing. Oops. In terms of the, what's happening? Okay, in terms of the handling the robot transfer constraints, we need to define new sets of binary variables, the binary sequencing variables Y, that will ensure that if slot T in unit M and the slot is allocated to an order starts after slot T prime in unit M prime. And in the case of featuring multiple robots for the transfer tasks, we may also need variables W. As in terms of the model constraints, you will have four sets of big M constraints, usual that you may find in these sequencing models. So, and basically, this will tell you that if I want to transfer lot I in unit M to lot, I first need to transfer lot I from unit M to unit M plus 1 before coming up with the next lot in the sequence I prime to unit M. So this is what they are ensuring, but I don't have too much time in to go and explain these constraints. And then I'll have additional sets of constraints that will ensure no overlap between the transfer to different units. In terms of the computational performance, we tested three alternative formulations, our one robot models that are hybrid. We also have the BK, which stands for Bhushan and Karimi, which is a hybrid model with slightly different sequencing variables, and our work from Adrian Aguirre and Carlos Mendes, which is a pure general precedence model, so no time slots for the processing tasks. You can see in the results that our new approach is clearly better, even though we have to say that from these case studies, only six problems can be solved to optimality. In terms of the relaxation, the model by Bhushan and Karimi has the same relaxation, I show in the column of R MIP. and it can be better in the smaller problems, but as you increase the size, you cannot solve it to optimality in the given hour. In terms of the poor sequencing model, it also finds good feasible solutions. It is more robust with respect to problem size when compared to Bushin and Karimi, so you can see that you still get quite decent solutions, but again, as we increase the size for the last two problems, we get no solution or really poor solutions. So, since we are not doing good enough with the full space models, we had to go and try to come up with the composition methods to address this problem. And what is the main motivation for coming up with the composition methods? Well, if you go out in industry, you typically have large problems to solve. So you need to come up with decision-making tools that are able to generate good quality solutions and with low computational resources. And in the context of industry, guaranteeing optimality loses importance in a way, because usually you can only consider a subset of the production goals, or you have uncertainty in the data, and so on. So implementing the solution as such is often limited by the dynamic nature of the industrial environments. But so you need to develop these tools, and what I want to emphasize is that given the many developments that have occurred in the past 20 years concerning scheduling models, in particular in the process system engineering community, I really feel that to develop these real-life applications, you should take advantage in some way of these state-of-the-art full-space models. And the main, my main argument is that in the current time, we have to say that these models are already capable of handling most of the features that you may encounter at the process plant. So they are general, and you should try to use constrained versions of these models to come up with the composition approach, and this is what I'll be focusing on the next slides. When you go and develop these efficient decomposition approaches, the idea is that you are going to keep the number of decisions at a reasonable level so that on each iteration of the algorithm, you'll get a very small computational time of the order of a fractions of a seconds or seconds at most. And hopefully, when you devise this algorithm, you will allow for having a few tunable parameters that you can adjust in order to have a trade-off between solution quality and the overall computational effort of your algorithm. So now I will return to the AWS problem, where our full-space models can only go up to 12 lots in 12 units, and we need to solve 25 lots in 12 units. So we need roughly to double the size in terms of the lots that we have. So let's see how we do. So what we did was to propose a new scheduling algorithm, which is an heuristic approach. Again, so we are not no longer guaranteeing optimality. We are going to solve constrained versions of the full space models I shown earlier, where we are going to first derive an initial schedule and then performing rescheduling by allowing to change some of the assignments and sequence decisions in a way to approach optimality. I will perform to determine the scheduling of the transportation tasks performed by the robot. I'm going to rely on discrete event simulation because this allows us to ensure a feasible solution. And in terms of the tunable parameter that I was mentioning before, is this NOS parameter where we are going to specify the number of lots that are going to be handled per iteration. So in a way, on the diagram on the right, I have the neighborhood search procedure for the relaxed model without the robot transfer constraints. I will find the best processing sequence for without the robot. Then I feed this to the discrete event simulation model, which takes into account the robot availability and worsens our solution in a way. And then I will perform rescheduling of this solution to order to come back with a better solution to our full problem. So, This rescheduling procedure uses the concept of neighborhood search. Neighborhood search has also been called solution polishing and local branching. And what it does is that it's going to solve highly constrained versions of our full space model that I discussed earlier. And by keeping the number of decisions at a reasonable level, we are going to come up with an improved solution in a decent amount of time. So how does it work? We start from a feasible solution. So on the right, we have considered six orders, sequence according to the lexicographic sequence. And if I consider three orders at a time, I'm going to pick three of these six orders and allow them to change positions in the sequence. So in this case, orders I2, I3, and I5. I have to say that this is the critical stage. Deciding which variables you are going to free is the challenging part of the algorithm, because this will affect how good you are going to do. And for doing that, you need to have some knowledge about the problem structure. As an example, for the relaxed one robot model without robot transferring constraints and acting solely on the processing sequence, you see that by rescheduling the orders, we are changing the position of the orders and doing this in a few iterations until coming up what is a better schedule in the end. So now for slide 27, in terms of the one robot model, there is now the robot, which is a shared resource, and there are two sets of interconnected binary variables, those related to the processing sequence of the chemical and water baths, and those related to the robot transportation sequence. So you need to know something about the problem structure in order to know that when you are freeing the decisions concerning to the processing tasks, you also free the corresponding decisions of the transportation tasks so that the solution can improve. So in this example, I was showing that if you allow for freeing up lots 1 and 2, those are the transfer tasks that you need. Now we have two indexes. I1 to M1 means transfer of lot I1 to unit M1. So you can see that you still have to allow for the I3 M1 to change so that you can potentially achieve a better solution. So, and in this second iteration that I show here, there was only a single transportation task that could be fixed. So in terms of this smart search method, there are still some sequencing, some binary variables that need to be free. And hopefully in the end, again, you'll get a better solution. So now describing some aspects of this discrete event simulation model that was developed for this problem. We have to say that we found out that it was a very attractive and powerful tool to model, analyze, and evaluate the impact of the different decisions. As major advantages that we may talk about, the first concerns the representation of complex manufacturing processes as a set of blocks, so sort of like what is done in Aspen, for instance. And we are going to, and the other aspect that is very much liked by the people at the plants is that we can visualize the dynamic behavior of the different elements. So in terms of our arena simulation model, we have a set of operative rules and strategic decisions that are on each sub-model of the process. In terms of handling the robot, we have some logic that are going to effectively synchronize the transportation of the jobs between the consecutive beds so that we ensure feasibility. And now I have a small video to show. No, not this one. Oops. No. This? Okay. So let's just show. So this was the interface that we actually developed in terms where you show the robot operating and moving the lots from one bath to the other. And this arena simulation model is linked to an Excel spreadsheet where it is not totally clear, but you are as soon as the jobs are being processed, you are identifying the starting and ending times of the jobs, and as you get this data, you are building the schedule dynamically so that you are finding out what's happening. So, and in this way, you are sort of like having a feeling of how your process is operating, and you can see if it's working if your heuristics that were used to in a way control the activity of the robot are making sense or not, and if the robot is mostly active, and if the everything is according to plan. So this is quite nice. So you get a picture of what's happening, and it's not like a black box where you just see the solution and the optimal schedule. So continuing to the slides now, to slide 29 and 30, where I'm going to show the computational results. When we apply the neighborhood search for the VLAX1 robot model, so this was the first part of the algorithm, we started with the lexicographic sequence where all the binary variables are fixed, so you have a linear problem solved almost instantaneously. Since this is a simpler problem, you can go and up to consider 7 lots per iteration, and you can still perform 100 iterations of the algorithm in less than 60 seconds. So at most, for the most complex problem, you have 46 seconds. If you go and compare the performance of this neighborhood search procedure of letting our full space relaxed one robot model running up to 60 seconds, you see on the last column that you get more or less the same results, sometimes better, sometimes worse, in the first problems. The difference is not significant, but in the last problem, which is the one we already want to solve, our full space model is already almost 3% worse than our search procedure. And once you get the solution, an improved solution, you are going to take the information about the processing sequence from this solution, and you are going to feed there in a simulation model. So in this case, the discrete event simulation, the solution that you get previously is a lower bound because you were considering a relaxed version of the problem without the robot constraints. So as soon as you consider the robot transfers, you are going to worsen the solution. So at most, you'll get the same solution. So your makespan will increase. And this is what we show here in the last two columns, is that you have the lower bound and arena simulation gets you a solution that for the simpler problems, the ones featuring just 4 bats, it's very close to the lower bound, meaning that our arena simulation, our discrete event simulation model is performing well. But as you increase the number of bats, you are starting to have really poor solution. So although you do not know which is the optimal solution, this gap between the two columns is telling you how good our discrete event model is performing. And you can see that for 12 bats, the last two problems, the difference is already quite significant. So sometimes it's almost 30 to 40% more in makespan. And we have the feeling that the solution should not be as poor as this one. So we need to perform rescheduling over the solution you get from ARENA. You get major improvements in solution quality with respect to the initial schedule, as you can see highlighted in these two columns. So now the 529 that we have from ARENA, we can get to 428 or even 410 if you consider it 3 lots at a time in our iteration. The good thing is that if you consider just 2 lots per iteration, you solve all problems in less than 30 minutes, which is quite convenient. You also have this tunable parameter NOS that if you increase, you are approaching the full space model. So you hopefully, on average, you will increase the solution quality. But on the other end, you are also increasing the time it takes to solve each problem. So the total computational effort will increase. And since we are picking the orders that we are freeing for the rescheduling procedure, we are picking these orders randomly. We perform 10 different runs to have some statistical significance. So we have average, worst, and best models. Another aspect I want to emphasize still on slide 32 is that if you go and use the feature of CPLEX, which is solution polishing, to try to have an heuristic procedure that improves our solution. You will find out that, again, solution polishing is doing quite well once you have problems with 4 bots, but as you increase the number of bots, you are getting worse and worse solutions. And for the larger problems, since you are not able to get a feasible solution up to 60 seconds, which was the time that we allowed to perform the typical branch and bound process, and then we applied solution polishing up to an hour of computational time. So you are seeing that you are getting worse solutions in 1 hour, whereas with our neighborhood search procedure, you can do much better up to half an hour. So for P8, you have 336 as compared to 400 and something. So if we also apply the constraint programming approach, and in this case, we have an integrated approach where we devised our CP model as well as our efficient domain-specific search strategy. And what we found is that it is quite competitive as a full-space approach. We were able to get feasible solutions to all problems that we were solving in 1 hour of computational time. And it's quite a decent solution even for the largest problem, 443, whereas our best solution was 410. So at most 5% below the best solution that we have. Although we have to say that since this the full space model, if you increase the computational time, you are less likely to keep improving the solution as compared to the neighborhood search procedure that we developed. So in a way, our method is more robust to a further increase in problem size. So just an illustration of in slide 34 of the best schedule that we found for the largest problem. We are only showing the transportation tasks and not the robot transfer tasks, which are even more. So you can see that this is already an interesting, challenging problem in terms of the number of tasks that you need to schedule. If you go and evaluate our neighborhood search procedures by representing the evolution in solution quality with the number of iterations or the total computational time, you see that most of your improvements occur in the first 20% of the computational time. And that towards the end, towards the 100 iterations, you are really reaching a plateau, meaning that it is validating the number of iterations that you were using in the algorithm. So, to conclude, the main points I would like for you to take home is that there is a wide variety of approaches to handle scheduling problems. In this talk, we have addressed we have used mathematical programming, constraint programming, discrete event simulation, and there are also heuristics. If you go and search the literature, you may find that there can be a few alternative efficient models, although most of them are proper for academic research, but tend to be quite bad or intractable for industrial problems. So because of this, you need undeveloped efficient decomposition methods that allow you to find good quality solutions with few computational resources, and it's really critical to have tunable parameters in order to adjust the complexity of the problem with the computational time that you have available to solve this same problem. And in these efficient decomposition methods, it is quite critical to incorporate knowledge about problem structure, so we really feel that we should be doing more concerning this aspect in order to come up with really good solution methods. So, you can see that major improvements are possible in some problems. So, for instance, if we started from the solution in Bushan and Karimi's paper in 2004, which they have an heuristic algorithm combining also a two-stage procedure with mathematical programming models, they found a makespan of 478.6. Our discrete event simulation model was not doing that well, so if it used as a standalone approach, you could get a solution which was 10% worse. CP, you could improve by 7.4%. With our neighborhood search procedure, you can go, depending on the number of lots per iteration that you consider, you can go from 10 to 14%. And we have also already developed an even improved neighborhood search procedure where you can do, we get below the 400 mark or in terms of make span, and we can improve by 17.1%. And I really feel that for this problem, the optimal solution should be in the vicinity of 350. So that I think there is still something that can be done. So with that, I would like to acknowledge my co-workers in terms of Carlos Mendes, Luis Jeballos, and Adriana Aguirre from Argentina. Luis is actually doing a postdoc right now at LENEG. They developed some of the results and animations, but in particular Adrian, that were shown in this talk. I'd like to acknowledge our sponsors in terms of the National Science Foundation of Portugal and from Argentina, which we have a bilateral cooperation agreement, and also with the United States, the Luso American Foundation and the National Science Foundation are sponsoring my stay here at Carnegie Mellon until December. There are some references that I show you from this work, and I would like to thank you for your attention and welcome questions that you may have.
Let's see, I guess we have time for some questions. I don't know if anybody out there would like to ask a question to Petra. Usually they don't ask questions. Any questions? Larry.
Just out of curiosity, your ceiling time is about an hour, right, for the full space model. Have you tried just cranking it away for a couple of days to see how good a solution you get? Basically, you think it's more like 350.
Yeah. Well, the problem is that my experience in scheduling is that if these models are not solvable up to 1 hour or 2 hours, they are lost in the branch and bound tree. So, giving more time, sometimes they run out of memory in terms of the sequencing variables. And in the others, not that much is happening. So there were other problems earlier that I let them run for many days, but usually it's not.
So what's the lower bound?
The lower bound in
terms problem.
So the lower bound that we have is the information of the relaxed model, which the relaxed model for the largest problem, 25 lots in 12 units, you can not get a feasible solution in 1 or 2 hours.
So the gap is large.
The gap is pretty large, yeah. In terms of...
Yeah. Maybe one question you mentioned about quote, exploring knowledge about the problem. Can you explain, like, in this particular application, what did you actually exploit?
So in terms of exploiting knowledge, I think on the one hand, is defining which binary variables you are going to freeze. So in that sense, in this work, this was done randomly, but I really feel that perhaps we should look into the problem and try to come up with a smart method or using some sort of simplified model to pick which variables should be free. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, in terms of the knowledge, if you have more than one set of binary variables, you need to know how are these related, and in terms of the in this case of our sequencing variables, it was relatively easy to know how changing the processing sequence would change the robot transportation tasks, because with sequencing models you know what's happening, or they are more easy to understand after some time. So in a way, we know once we free one variables, which are the ones we need to free in order to keep improving. And you could see in the chart that the solution, every iteration had a high degree of chance of improving the solution. So that's why I'm really happy about these methods with these neighborhood search methods, that algorithms that Carlos started to develop back in 2004 when I was here for the first time. I really feel that they are really powerful. They should be used as most as we can.
I guess one other question. You use only CPLEX, and of course you know, if you look at all the solos like Robbie and Express, you know, sometimes the performance can change a lot. Can you comment on that? Did you try one of these other MLP solvers in these problems?
So in this work I showed here, I didn't try any solvers, but Carlos, in the part they are developing with their models, they have been solving both models with Cplex and Gurobi, and they are finding out that the solutions are not that different. So sometimes one is better than the other, but it usually takes more or less the same time on average to get to the same solution for this problem.
Any other questions, comments? Maybe since you're on slide 35, can you explain what the different numbers are?
So the different numbers are just the size of the problem. So it would be
size of problem.
Number of lots in the first and then number of bots in the second.
In your example, after you fix in your sequencing binary variables, you use discrete invariant simulation to come up with a suitable schedule. So I guess it's also possible for you just maybe to put together maybe an LP mass program.
So the question was that in our algorithm we were using discrete event simulation in order to come up with a first feasible solution in terms of the robot sequencing constraints, and so he was asking if we could come up with a different method to replace discrete event simulation. And the answer is yes, of course. In the last column, when I showed the new results, actually this is what we are doing in our better neighborhood search procedure, where since I was discussing that you use constrained versions of your full space models to perform rescheduling, but you can also use the same models to perform constructive scheduling. So where you are going to start coming up with a schedule one lot at a time, and then you come up with a solution, and then you're starting freeing up the lots and trying to improve in a rescheduling procedure.
Local branching, if it's similar to local. Not really. I think what Peter is talking about is there are some approaches where instead of solving the problem full space, you start with one job at a time and you keep augmenting the jobs. It's not the same as local branching. Okay. Any other questions, comments? All right. Well, with this, again, let me thank Pedro for a very nice presentation and, very impressive work. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. I think it was... Yeah, well, it has many information.